Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hard Hits. I'm your host, Derek Felix, and it is a late night edition of Hard Hits. So welcome to the program, a late night edition on the Hard Hits Network, a weekend blitz as we take you through just for an hour. So this is just going to be an hour live, and a lot of stuff to get to, as usual, a lot of baseball. Let's start it off with the Yankees, obviously. The Yankees celebrating the 1998 team. The 98 team is one that's going to be special for a long time. So as I watch Hoosiers and hear the music in Hoosiers, which is kind of symbolic when you think about greatness and think about great sports movies. Well, I think they could probably make a movie about that 98 Yankee team because they were special. They were a special group of guys. I talked about it. I spoke about it last night. And certainly when you talk about all the guys that contributed to the team, I mean, really, the double digits and home runs, the starting pitching, El Duque, Andy Pettit, David Cone, Boomer Wells, Arabu, Strawberry with 24 home runs before he got sick with the cancer. I mean, it was too bad he couldn't perform in the postseason, but he was part of a 96 team, and he was a big part of it as well during that run. It's poetic when you think about it that he and Gooden actually were part of the 96 team after winning 10 years prior with the New York Mets. Steinbrenner was always willing to give trouble players second chances, and he did that with two of the most popular Mets and two of the greatest Mets, even though they both had certainly checkered histories. But when I think about the 98 team, I was reading something before I came on the air. It was a tweet. That Yankees team that won 114 games and during the regular season almost 48 after losing the first three games, they only gave up 38 unearned runs the whole year. I think that tells you just about the kind of perfection that they had, how flawless they were. They executed. They did all the fundamentals. And it's ironic because I'm watching a movie about fundamentals when I'm watching The Hoosiers, which is my favorite sports movie, edging out The Natural. And I guess third would probably be Field of Dreams. I'd probably go in that order. There are a lot of great sports movies. But I don't think anything's better than Hoosiers. In my opinion, especially with Jimmy Chitwood making big shots and then coming back, even though it was they did a little bit of a script here and it changed the story a little bit. It was based on Milan winning the Indiana State title, I think in 1952. But as it correlates to the Yankees, you know, I just think about how special a group that was, with Posada behind the plate and Joe Girardi being unselfish there and teaching Posada the ropes and letting him become the starting catcher there as he was on his way out. And I think Girardi was also on the 99 team, but he eventually left. Posada hitting 16 or 17 home runs as the starting catcher for the most part, and Tino Martinez, a model of consistency at first base with the power of the RBIs. And he also played a pretty good first base. So that's the other thing that kind of gets lost. And Tino could really play the position. So when the Yankees made that trade, another just well-executed move in which they traded Russ Davis, who was a power-hitting third baseman in their system, and Sterling Hitchcock, who was a good lefty pitcher. They traded those two guys to Seattle. And look at how it panned out. They got Tino Martinez and they got Jeff Nelson. Nelson, of course, becoming part of a great relief corps that included Mike Stanton, who was the lefty, and then they added Graham Lloyd, who struggled when he first came over in 96, but then became unhittable when he was lefty versus lefty, and of Mariano Rivera, who eventually became the closer and supplanted John Wetland, who eventually went to Texas. So it's pretty incredible when you think about what they had there. Chad Curtis was a key player. So was, and of course, Chuck Knobloch and Jeter at the top of the order. Paul O'Neill, Mr. Steady himself, and Mr. Intensity. Pretty amazing. Speaking of amazing, I'm just going to watch the end of this movie here, Hoosiers. I guess it's perfect timing. As we're going to watch that last shot, final shot in Hoosiers by Jimmy Chitwood. What I like most about this movie, I think the acting is unbelievable. The music, obviously, is a great score. Pac-Man was perfect in the role. Dennis Hopper was great in the supporting role as the dad who had a drinking problem and was in the hospital listening to it. It's just so well done. It's just well directed, well produced. I think basketball, the way basketball is meant to be played. And as I'm watching here, Chit would get ready to line up with five. He goes with four. Yeah. And then he's going to just cut to the right to get enough distance to get his shot off. Which, of course, back then was only two. But that was a three from where he shot it. Barbara Hershey, too. She was very beautiful and played Jane Hackman's love interest. She was kind of like the principal there. I love the images, too, at the end of this movie. And there's so much imagery when you look at it and the way they shot it. Of course, there is no Hickory, but it is Indiana. And you see so many great shots of what it would be like to live in a farm area, in a small area, in an area where basketball is beloved, unlike any other place. You know, everybody talks about New York being the greatest place for basketball. Yeah, maybe as a city, and maybe Chicago, but in Detroit, but Indiana might be tops when it comes to basketball. They love their basketball. And there's a movie coming out very soon, a documentary on those perfect Indiana Hoosiers. Yeah, it's coming out. It's going to be coming out. Perfect season with Bobby Knight. And it's going to be, I think, on Showtime. That's going to be something to watch. I watch a lot of interesting documentaries in my free time. And one of them that I got to see was I saw a great story on Lynyrd Skynyrd, who was a great band, one of my dad's favorites, and one that, of course, I know pretty well along with my brother, with the big hit Sweet Home Alabama and Free Bird being our favorite song. That was actually my brother's song at his bar mitzvah in 96. And I love Free Bird as well. But they had a lot of great songs, and it was really well done. It was an hour and a half long, and I love you guys. That's the end of the movie with the Hooters. But I really enjoyed what I saw. I do watch a lot of cool documentaries. So that's part of what I do, whether it's sports, music, or I watch a lot of SVU, Law & Order SVU, which I think is the best show to watch. But I guess I'm pretty much going all over the place, and why not? Because I had a great movie on, and I saw a great documentary on Lynyrd Skynyrd, a band that was at the prime, in their prime in 1977, and they took a plane that they shouldn't have taken, because there were some issues with it, and they should have got it fixed. And the lead singer passed away in an accident, and so did the guitarist, and they were, what, 28 years old? 27 or 28 years old. I mean, it's just tragic. And the backup singer as well. Five people died, and the two brothers survived somehow. And they get, they're still, and he gets to talk about it. It's just really well done. But Lynyrd Skynyrd was a great band, and they don't really get talked about as much probably as it should because of so many other great acts. But I mean, I think there were parts of it that are very uplifting, and you see all the footage, and it's great. And you see why they were such a great band from Alabama, a southern band with southern music, and how popular they were when they went to London in England, performed there, and treated like the Beatles. And you, of course, it's like a tale of triumph and tragedy, like the tragedy at the end. And he's giving his account of what was going on the plane. And the pilot gave him a look of death or whatever, about the old was trying to make a landing with one engine when he was in the cockpit. And he just told him to buckle up, and he and his brother survived, and the other two members didn't. And it's just, the other three members didn't. It's just really sad. But I am a sucker for documentaries. I think that you could probably have a great documentary on that 1998-1999, maybe down the line, when we get older, whether it's 30, 40 years down the line, they might do it. They definitely probably will. Derek Jeter, Chuck Knoblauch, David Cohn, Scott Brosius, the number 9 hitter with 98 RBIs. The team was just really special. It's so special. And Yankees did their best on the field also yesterday with an 11-5 win over the Toronto Blue Jays, who I think it was 11-6 actually, because they brought in the one really tough reliever at the end. But they so far to take care of business. They're 2-for-2 on the weekend against a bad Toronto team. A team that actually has Billy McKinney, the ex-Yankee farmhand that came over originally in the Gleyber Torres trade for Chapman, and was moved for Jay, was part of the deal for J.A. Happ. I think the most important thing that you take away from the game is Severino took a baby step forward. Yes, he did give up 2 earned runs. They did have a 5-run sixth. The one thing he needs to do better is just manage his pitch count a little bit better. Control, realize that you don't have to strike out everybody. He struck out 8 in his 5-plus innings. He pitched into the sixth. And he ran out of gas, and they had to get him. And Kainley came in, and Kainley struggled mightily. And the Jays were able to get back in the game. So they did get back in it. cutting it from 8-0 to 8-5, but the Yankees will put it away. Giancarlo Stanton remains on fire. Another big blast to left field, 419 feet, or 412. No doubter. His ninth home run. Judge went on the DL. And back-to-back games with home run. And he's just been on fire. And he's done a lot of carrying. I've talked about Didi. Didi hit his 22nd in the first inning. If he continues to play well, number three more RBIs. And Nicky Andujar solidifying his Rookie of the Year candidacy with three more hits, and including his 36th double and his 20th home run. And I think he's on a list of players that, as rookies, who had at least 30-plus doubles and 20 home runs. That's among some of the all-time greats. It's a pretty exclusive list. And Andujar, with his 3-for-5 effort and three RBIs knocked in and two runs scored, is at 300 for the season. 300 with 20 home runs, 36 doubles, and 63 RBIs. Like Gleyber Torres, I said, it looks like he's starting to come out of it. He had two hits as well. So another two hits. That's hits in three straight games for him. And I think he's got four altogether in the last three games. So that's very important. See him maybe starting to come out of it. Sometimes it just takes maybe a bloop or just a tough at bat. You know, he guided one into the outfield in that bottom of the ninth inning against the Rays, a game that they should have probably come back and won, but they didn't even score any runs. So it was terrible. It was a terrible loss, but definitely an excellent effort by Gleyber as he gets his stroke back. And Gary Sanchez's rehab assignment is going to start. Even Greg Bird hit a home run. We know Bird has been just in a horrific slump. He hit a 10th home run into the second deck. A call I heard by John Sterling, who was just awesome to listen to. And the Yankees know that they can only get the wild card. So what they want to do right now, especially with what's going on with the Astros, you know, tied for the AL West lead because the Oakland Athletics beat them again 7-1. They just want to take care of business. They have a good schedule here, favorable schedule. Just get done what you can get done. You're not going to come back and win the division, obviously. The Red Sox have that salted away pretty much. But Britton with a third straight good outing. Betances with a scoreless inning. He's been very consistent. And Cole, even though he did give up the one run, was able to get a strikeout to end that inning, an 11-6 final score. As the Yankees pull back to 31 games over. And if they were in another division, they'd be in first. But they aren't. They still have the major second-best record. I want to talk about the AL West for a second. The AL Central, we know the Indians are winning the division. They're going to be without Trevor Bauer for a month. And he was a Cy Young candidate. So that's a setback. Chris Sale also for Boston is back on the 10-day DL. Yeah, they might just be resting him, which is possible. I don't really like the whole resting, but let's talk about the A's and the Astros for a second. I talked about Oakland a lot in depth last night, and it's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing what Oakland's been able to do. Trevor Cahill went 7 innings with 7 strikeouts, 7 scoreless innings, and 7 Ks and for his 5th win. And the A's were able to do very well and knock out Dallas Keuchel. Who had a good second half, but he still lost the 9-10. And the Oakland Athletics, 74-49, are in a flat-footed tie with the Astros with the third and final game at the Coliseum later today or tomorrow if you're on the West Coast because it's in Oakland. And they're just unbelievable. I mean, Yeah, maybe they caught a break. Maybe they didn't with the overturn on Friday night with Laureano somehow getting his hand underneath that tag before that tag was made. They said that his hand had already touched the plate, and then the walk-off home run that we saw. It's pretty amazing also with the walk-off. And this team's getting a lot of good play. Semien is starting to play better and starting to contribute offensively. Olson, of course, and Chris Davis, two more RBIs, a couple of doubles. He's going to wind up with 120. Now, I've got 95 RBIs right now. He's a machine. He'll probably wind up with 45, 46 home runs before it's over. Jed Lowry, who always has been very good, and he's got over 70 runs knocked in. Yeah, this team is just getting outstanding contributions from everybody. Scotty's been a good addition there. I don't know a lot about Laureano, but he's been playing center field for them. So that's a very interesting story in itself. Ramon Laureano, actually he's a former Astro. That's interesting. It was actually an Astros 2014 16th round pick. So he's played some center field for them right now. What be his rookie season, actually. They just have a lot of balance to their team. You don't always have to have the quote-unquote superstar, although Chris Davis, to me, is one of the upper echelon players when you talk about what he does with the production, certainly. He certainly would apply. And as I'm speaking here on this Hard Hits podcast, they followed up the great Hoosiers movie, Hoosiers. It's another basketball movie. It's not a classic. It involves basketball and it involves Michael J. Fox. And I can only be talking about Teen Wolf. Teen Wolf, which is a funny movie and it's got some really cool songs in it. And Michael J. Fox turning into a wolf. It's a pretty cool movie. Even though the basketball is not as crisp. It's really not about the basketball, even though he is on the basketball team. But that's funny. That's a cute movie. I'll say that. I don't know what's going to happen with the AL West. I really don't. I keep thinking, the Astros, they're going to get it back together. I mean, they are defending champs, and they will get it back together. And they might. They just got Springer off the DL. When you have injuries to two of your best players, George Springer, of course, they just got back and he's off and usually so productive at leadoff spot and able to hit leadoff home runs. And they're still without Altuve. It definitely hurts. And now you understand why Altuve won MVP, even though I still think Judge probably deserved a better fate last year. So, they have enough. They have more talent. Bregman, who's a terrific player. Correa, who's been very disappointing this year. Gurriel, Gattis, Reddick. They've just had a lot of guys that have underperformed. So, I don't know what happened. What's going wrong? I mean, we know that their bullpen is not that good to begin with. But it seems, I don't know, maybe the A's are a team of destiny. Their bullpen's a lot better than the Astros. Familia had been shaky, been spotty the last couple of times out, but he goes a score setting with two strikeouts in this one. And I'll tell you, I mean, they look like they're for real. And they've been making this charge, and they've charged all the way back. They were behind Seattle. They went by Seattle and past them. The Seattle Mariners, speaking of crazy, they got a really crazy, wild and crazy win, big win over the Dodgers tonight. A game in which they led 4-1, and it really looked like they had it cinched away. They got the 4 runs in the first inning, a 3-run blast by Kyle Seager. And Kyle Seager also was an unbelievable play at third base, some Gold Glove caliber third base play, take away a couple hits from the Dodgers. But the Dodgers, they have a lot of guys that could hit the ball out, and they've become a home run hitting team. That could be good and that could be bad. As a Yankee fan, I know that. For the Dodgers, it was good tonight because they went against a 1-2 punch of Alex Colom, who they got from Tampa, and Edwin Diaz, who leads the majors in saves and has a chance to get 60 saves. Colom had only allowed 3 home runs entering the 8th inning, and he gave up a solo home run to Justin Turner, who turned on one and hit it into about the 6th or 7th row in the left field seats. And that made it a 4-2 ball game. And then Bellinger, after Machado, after they were going to get Machado out, and he was actually 0-for-5 in the game, and he also made a sparkling defensive play. So there was a lot of good defense in this game. Brian Dozier also played excellent defense in the second to keep some balls on the infield that I don't even know how he kept on the infield before the Dodgers lost. Well, Bellinger, he's been more locked in. I've been talking about this. And second half's been better, and he's been hitting the ball a lot better. Well, he absolutely crushed one off Colom. I mean, he was ready for it, and he was relaxed, and he absolutely crushed one that went off the third deck at Safeco Field. Just unbelievable. Wow. I mean, if the ball didn't hit where it hit off the deck, it would have still been traveling. It probably would have gone about 470, 480 feet. Meaning he's not built like a home run hitter. He's very lanky. Kind of reminds me of John Olerud, but he's a home run guy. I mean, his 15 of his 20 home runs have come against righties. So kind of like a little bit like Jock Peterson there. So 2 solo shots made it 4-3. They still had to get a run off Diaz, and Diaz is very tough to hit. And up stepped Max Muncy, and Max Muncy has been having this special year for the Dodgers, and he worked the count full, and he did not miss the low fastball, and he hit it out. He drove it out into right field seats, and he dropped his bat. He did the bat flip, and he was pumped up. He was really pumped up, and the Dodgers were pumped up, and just like that, they had tied the ball game. But Edwin Diaz was able to get a strikeout and get out of the inning. The Mariners did not score in the bottom of the 9th inning. And Adam Warren, our old friend Adam Warren, able to pitch at work a scoreless 10th inning, and he winds up with his second win, probably first as a Mariner. Wind up pitching the 10th inning because there weren't really any relievers for him to go to. Adam Warren was a good guy for the Yankees. So he comes in, he works around a walk and works a scoreless inning, and the Mariners eventually loaded the bases. And Dave Roberts, and this is the thing I don't like about managing today, in all these matchups, you know, we saw this with the Astros and Tony Sipp, where Tony Sipp is terrible. Like, if he was a righty, he wouldn't even be in baseball. And he grooved one and it got clocked. It got absolutely clocked by Matt Olson in Oakland's walk-off win on Friday. And Dave Roberts, he's managing by the book, and he's bringing this guy in, bringing that guy in. And I've never even heard of some of these guys that they have. And this is because they don't have Kelly Jansen, because they don't have a great bullpen outside of Kellen Jansen. So he's just moving guys in and out. Ferguson had loaded the bases for three hits. He brings in Floral walked a guy first to load the bases. And then, out of all things, Floral balks on the winning run. Balked on the winning run. So, balks on the winning run, and the Mariners walk off in the oddest and most bizarre fashion imaginable. And Maven comes across to score the winning run. So, they're 71-53. So it's not looking good. It's not looking too good that they'll actually make it. But they're still hanging around. They're 71-53, and so they're three games. It's basically three games behind, as far as it goes. So for that second wild card spot. The Seattle Mariners. And Dodgers are a strange team to figure out. I don't think they're going to make it. And I'll tell you why. I just don't think they're pitching strong enough. I know Kershaw is still very good, and he's going for them on Sunday. And that's a game they have to win. And Rich Hill is solid. So is Alex Wood. I just don't buy their pitching at all. They trail the Diamondbacks by two games because the Diamondbacks actually lost to the Padres. The Padres only have 49 wins, but they were able to get a walk-off hit from Villanueva in the bottom of the ninth inning. Goldschmidt had another home run. Goldschmidt's been on fire for the Diamondbacks. I've talked about the Diamondbacks for a while. I've been talking about them, about the fact that they added Eduardo Escobar. That was a good move. Pollock, who's healthy this year. Goldschmidt's been on fire. Godley, who did not pitch a good game. But their pitching staff is very strong. Coles has pitched very well for them, which is kind of a miraculous in itself. And Greinke, the 1-2 punch that you have there with Greinke and the other guy that I can't think of at the moment. Corbin. So I just think that I think they're the best team in the NL West. There's been a lot of improvement from them. So I really like the team they have there. And I think they're going to win the division, which means the Dodgers are going to wind up fighting one of those wild cards. My gut tells me, and I could be wrong about this, I feel that whether it's the Braves or Phillies, whichever team doesn't win the NL East, they're going to wind up with the top wild card. One of those teams. One's going to win the division, and one is going to get the top wild card. Right now, it's nip and tuck. It's the Braves right now. They did lose an extra inning, so loss for them. Faltonowicz was pitching outstanding baseball, and he's actually a top five pitcher in the National League this year. He pitched a great game, seven innings, no runs allowed, four hits, nine strikeouts, no walks. He's got a 2.72 ERA. And it gets blown by Minter, who's their closer. He gives up three in the ninth inning. And Jackson gives up two more in the tenth. And they lose a heartbreaker to the Rockies. The Rockies gaining a game from both the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. I think the Rockies are they tied with the Dodgers, or are they a game ahead? I can't seem to remember. But Markakis is now hitting 318, and he drove in two more runs to 80 RBIs. You might have to talk about him for MVP. Everybody talks about the other guys, but Markakis had a great year for the Braves. I know nobody really is going to take him seriously, but Nathan Hackett is having a great year, and there really aren't any, like, any just standout candidates. Arenado will have the best numbers, but I don't think he's going to win. Javi Baez has cooled off.
He has no RBIs in his last, I think, 7 or 8 games, and maybe 2 or 3 hits, maybe. I don't know. No home runs. So he's cooled off. Matt Carpenter, I don't know. I mean, I know he's got all the home runs. You know, if the Cardinals do get in, and believe it or not, by defeating the Brewers, going to have totally fallen apart. And Nicholas, I don't know where they got this guy from, but he's 13-3 with a 2.80 ERA. By beating them 7-2, they are now 68-56. They're half a game in front of the Brewers. They got second wild card. Just unbelievable what's gone on there with the Cardinals. They made the right call. They fired Matheny, once World Series manager. I guess they had a lot of problems, and ever since they got rid of him, they've been a different team. In the losing effort, Yelich with his 19th home run and Travis Shaw with his 24th. You know, it's odd because the Brewers made the trade from Moustakas, and that was a good upgrade, but he's been so-so. They still don't have a shortstop, and Eduardo Garcia is back up playing short for them. They traded for Shoup, and that looks like a wasted move. You can't have Wade Miley pitching for you. I know Wade Miley hasn't pitched a lot this year, but you don't want Wade Miley pitching at this time of year. DeJuan continues to knock runs in now. Bader continues to improve as a rookie. And these cards, these cardiac cards, they're doing it again. I mean, they're somehow doing this. You know, I did pick them over the Brewers to make the wild card. And now it's almost like they just turned it around. Everything is coming to fruition, except it's not Carlos Martinez that's leading them in the pitching department. It's Miles Mikolas, a 29-year-old. I mean, 29-year-old pitcher, though, will be turning 30 in a few days. Well, Thursday, actually. So he's 13-3. I mean, who bounced around from the Padres to Texas. And he wasn't even in the majors the last 3 years. And he's 13-3. I don't know how these things happen, but it seems like they become more and more common. Guys just come out of nowhere and just become stories. And this guy starts 13 wins for the Cards. And the Cards, they're not a perfect team, but they're getting things done with the rookies, O'Neill and Bader. And Osuna's not going to have runs, even though he's not hitting home runs. And Carpenter's got all the home runs. We'll leave that out. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on as far as and it's going to be a wild race. I mean, it will be a wild race. The Rockies, by the way, are 67-56, so they're right there. These are right there right now. One fewer loss gives them better percentage points because they've played a couple of less games than the Brewers. So they're right there for that second wild card. I'm eliminating the Nats. I'm eliminating them because I just don't think that they're good enough. They lost to the Marlins, who are just awful. The Derek Jeter Marlins in extra innings. You can't be losing games to the Marlins at this point. I mean, the Marlins are a very bad team. And it doesn't matter how well Harper has been hitting in the second half. It doesn't matter if Zimmerman's back and Murphy's back healthy. And Turner with a home run is 15th. There's something lacking from them. You know, it also had to do with Buck Martinez as their manager. But something is just wrong with them. And they put both Murphy and Harper on irrevocable waivers. If anybody can claim them, they can work out a trade if they're willing to pick up the contract. So I don't think Harper's going to wind up anywhere, because I don't think any team's going to give up what they want. And Daniel Murphy, he could be a help to somebody, and I could see somebody picking him up. So that is a very distinct possibility. But this is a very interesting race between, you got the Braves and Phillies, as I mentioned. And then you've got the NL West race between the Diamondbacks, Rockies, and Dodgers. And the Rockies are second right now, the Dodgers are third. And I don't know, the Dodgers have more talent than most teams, but I don't like something about them. Something's not right with them. And I don't think they're going to make it. And then you have the Cards, who have come all the way back to take the second wild card lead. Amazing in itself. And they're only four games behind the Cubs. So, and the Cubs actually lost the game. They lost to the Pirates, who have been ice cold. So, the baseball race is going to be a very interesting one. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Especially the National League, and of course, what happens with that AL West and that AL second AL wild card. I think no matter what happens between the Astros and the A's, one of those teams will win the division. The other team will probably take the second wild card, and the Mariners will get left out probably in the cold despite probably winning 97 or 98 games because they have a chance to do that. So that's kind of where things are right now as far as the baseball goes. And I did talk about Nick Markakis. Him and Freeman are battling for the batting title as teammates, and they both have around the same amount of RBIs, Freeman with more home runs. Matt Carpenter, Jesus Aguilar, although I don't know. Things are changing. Things are really changing in the NL. And the MVP race is wide open. So I don't really know who's going to take it. The EL MVP race, that seems like it's a two-horse race. And it doesn't matter how many home runs Jose Ramirez winds up with. And with Trout missing time now, and that pretty much eliminates him. I don't think he was going to win it anyway with the way Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez are going back and forth. You know, J.D. Martinez tried to win a Triple Crown. Trails his teammate in the batting average department. Betts is like around 350, and J.D. Martinez is around 334, 335. So, the numbers are so much better in the AL this year. If Chris Davis was in the NL, he would be the leading candidate for MVP. So, there's just a lot of great players in the AL this year. So, it's definitely a lot of fun to follow. Right now, it's 346 for Betts to 333 for J.D. Martinez, and Altuve still out at 329 if he qualifies. So it is what it is. We've got about 15 minutes left, and that's probably going to be it because there's really not much else to do. It's a podcast here edition overnight here. Derek Flex Felix here in the Staten Island, New York City area. Finally got some thunderstorms to cool things off a little more considerable, make things a little bit better. And it being a little bit cooler is probably better, especially with the fact that we've had so much humidity. It's been unbearable lately. And as we inch closer to September, you know, we're getting closer to the NFL. The NFL actually starting up, for real. I mean, yes, we've got preseason games and still a couple of weeks left of that. But, you know, we'll be here before you know it. And I think there's going to be some much more competitive divisions this year. I think we're going to see some pretty good competition. The Texans, Deshaun Watson is back finally, and he did pretty good in his preseason game last night. Threw for a touchdown, and was sharp. I think it was 6 out of 8 overall, and that's a very positive development for the Texans. if he could stay healthy, he stays on the field, big if, with what they have there, J.J. Watt and the defense, I do think they're the top team in that AFC, what is it, whatever it is, the AFC North, whatever it is, South, whatever, I think it's the South, but whatever division it is, I can't even remember, there's so many divisions, it's just so crazy, but there's certainly a lot to like right now with how things are working out. Like, they're definitely a team that I think can seriously compete. I think they're probably going to beat the Jags out for the division. I think they can win 11 to 12 games, get back on track. And I think they could be one of the better teams in the AFC, if not maybe the best. I mean, I don't know, unless you still think the Patriots are going to be the best team because they made the Super Bowl again last year, even though they lost the Eagles. But they have a lot of injuries. They have issues with Edelman. I know he'll be back eventually, and they always find ways to win games. But they lost the rookie offensive lineman out of Georgia for the year. I don't know. So it's going to be very interesting to see, but I do think you're going to see some improvement in some of those divisions. I do think that the Browns will be better. I don't know how much better they'll be, but I think they'll be competitive. I think the Jets will be a competitive team. I don't see them winning more than 7 games though, but the AFC East is going to be close. Patriots might be a little bit notched down. They might still hang on and win the AFC East, but they might have to do it with 11 wins, maybe 11-5. And I think the Bills, even with the rookie quarterback, Josh Allen, with the fact that they got the run game, Shady McCoy, put everything behind him, very good defense. I think the Bills are going to win about 10 games. And I think the Dolphins will be competitive again. And they're a probably 9-win team. And the Jets probably, I think that division will be a lot closer this year. And I also believe that when you have a division with the Texans and the Jaguars, who should be a good team again, and the Colts with Andrew Luck, who's healthy, and Tennessee, I think that's going to be a good division as well. So I think there are going to be some very close divisions this year. So it actually might set up to be a little more on the competitive side in some of these divisions. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. So it should be interesting to follow. But the preseason football, you know, I don't really get too juiced up for it. I mean, I will watch the Giants and Jets preseason game. And that's next Friday. So we'll see how that goes. I'm curious to see, you know, what the Giants do there with Saquon Barkley. Are they going to sit him out until the start of the season because of the injury? I think they'll probably be cautious on the cautious side. You know, he's a running back. You know? And, I haven't really watched anything yet in terms of Giants. I've been following, just keeping track of it low key on the radio and in the box scores. But you know, you've got some interesting stories. I'm going to follow Odell Beckham if they're going to actually play him or not. Is Eli going to play? Is he going to play a couple of series, 2-3 series next week? These are all good questions. And of course, I definitely want to see, you know, how the Jets look at quarterback. I mean, is it going to be Teddy Bridgewater, or is it going to be the phenom, Sam Darnold? And this is an excellent quarterback class, and so it's going to be a lot of there's a lot of intrigue behind this quarterback class, and I'm not one to compare. I don't like doing comparisons, so I'm not going to go and do that. You know, we're not going to compare the 2003 class, the 2003 class with Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger and Phil Rivers. We're not doing that. We're not comparing it to that unbelievable class in the 80s, 84 or 83, with Marino, as well as Elway and some other quarterbacks, including Ken O'Brien, who the Jets took over Dan Marino. But a lot of teams passed on Dan Marino because of things that were proven wrong. They thought that he was a drug user, and he wasn't. And it's pretty unbelievable when you think about it. So, I'm not gonna go out there, and I'm not gonna do comparisons. So, I mean, Josh. By the way, Ross Rosen, who was so upset that he was passed on by so many teams, he's the other quarterback in a temple role by the Arizona Cards. He had a good preseason game on Friday night, 2015, went over the Saints with 6 of 6 for 61 yards. So he had a good debut for them. So he was 6 for 6 on one drive, and he was 10 of 16 with an 11-yard score for 107. So it's good. It's a unique class, but who will be the top rookie? Will it be one of the quarterbacks? Or will it be Saquon Barkley? Or will it be a surprise? That's the thing, you know, there's some excitement here with what's coming in. Are there going to be a defensive player? Maybe a guy on the offensive line that can make a difference. And don't forget about some of those running backs, like Chubb as well. Chubb's another guy to keep an eye on with the Cleveland Browns. So we're going to have a really good running game, a great balanced running attack, which I think is the way to go. I don't think you have to be conventional anymore. I think that you want to have, you know, one guy that could certainly run, but you also want to have the second guy, so the first guy that kind of run out. You want to have that one guy that can kind of be multi-dimensional, the multi-purpose guy. Shady McCoy does that. Tiki Barber did that for the Giants. You know, as much as I mock Tiki Barber, he's the greatest Giant running back of all time. He, as controversial as he was and as self-serving as he was at the end, trying to get Coughlin fired, and it's just like, it was poetic that they won after he left and retired. But you want to have that guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and be a threat to go all the way. Christian McCaffrey, certainly like that. There's a couple other guys like that as well. And I just think you have to, I mean, unless you have a horse, and maybe Saquon Barkley will be that horse for the Giants. So, but I think it's good to have versatility in this league. You want to keep your, especially your running backs, the way I think that how brutal the game is, you want to keep them fresh. I'm a big believer in that. Yeah, so because running backs do have a shorter shelf life. So there is risk. I mean, the Giants decided they wanted him. So, just hold on for 1 second here. All right, I'm back. Got the call from the brother, JNF. So, a couple of minutes left here on this podcast. Really not much else to say. Updating the tennis.
there is going to be another Roger Federer Novak Djokovic final on hard court. It'll be Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic tomorrow in Cincinnati, Cincinnati Open. So there you have it, Novak and Roger. One more time, possible U.S. Open final preview, perhaps. I mean, who knows? But they're going to play. They're going to face each other, and whenever they play each other, it's always interesting to follow. So I don't know if I'll be able to catch that one. I got some schoolwork to do, but it's going to be. It's always interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see who wins. Wins that, but it's still 2 out of 3 sets though. So 2 out of 3 sets compared to 3 out of 5, it's much different. It is much different. Djokovic beating Baron Cilic in 3 sets. Federer was a set up and it was 1-1 when David Goffin had to retire. So, and the women's final is all set. Halep will go against Kiki Bertens, who was able to come back and upset Kvitova, who you know, is an enigma player, of a player, very talented. You know, we're coming up on the U.S. Open. We're only a couple weeks away, and a lot of excitement, a lot of intrigue. Whenever Federer and Djokovic play, though, I mean, it's always intriguing, to say the least. Not much else left to do here on this Hard Hits overnight show. We've done a lot of baseball. We've done baseball. We've done some preseason football, a little bit of tennis. I talked a little bit about Hoosiers, and about Leonard Skinner, a documentary that I was able to watch. That was very enjoyable. So a lot of enjoyable stuff, certainly. We'll save some of the hockey for a future show, since, look, there's still time for hockey. There's always time to do some hockey, and maybe I'll do that on a separate podcast. I think that's pretty much going to do it. It's late enough here on a Sunday morning. So tune in to any future shows. This is Derek Felix signing off for the Hard Hits Network. Have a great night, everybody, and enjoy your Sunday. Whatever you do, enjoy your Sunday. Have a good one.